listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 150 of Rogue Startups. Hey, it's a milestone episode. Yay, we made it.
Yay. We didn't die and burn in podcasting inferno just yet.
Yeah. Just yet. Yeah, we're still kicking. Happy birthday to us, I guess.
Yep. No, it's good, man. It's funny. I listened to like Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 417 this week, I think, and I'm like, wow. They just got started earlier and they publish every week. We slack off a lot, but I think we're kicking it. And actually, Dave, I think we've gotten more like engagement and feedback from listeners in the last 6 months than we ever have before. So maybe we're asking for it more or talking about when it happens more on episodes like this. But yeah, I've gotten, I had someone reach out that listens to the podcast that is potentially interested in our customer success engineer role. And just, yeah, a lot Ooh, of like, you know, nice. Hey, want to kind of shoot the shit or catch up or meet up next time you're in town or something like that. So yeah, it's been really cool.
Well, I think the level of our discourse has really come up quite a bit in the last year. I mean, I've liked the episodes that we've been putting out the last year. I hope everybody else has too.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think we found our sweet spot. And I think this week will be a similar one where I think we talk around a topic and our experiences with it instead of just being kind of like esoteric. You know, chewing the fat about something we don't know anything about. Hopefully, maybe it's that we have more experience now so that we can talk from a position of experience and maybe even authority, I don't know, on some of these things.
I would like to say that I have zero authority on anything. The more I know, the less I understand.
Yeah,
and the less I feel confident about it.
So what's new?
Well, I am in the middle of hammering a bunch of various things to try to get some leads. So after a mastermind discussion yesterday, I am hammering an old lead source that I had completely forgotten about from June when I was buried in some other stuff. And so I had a call with them today. I'm going to get set up with a landing page and start trying paid lead acquisition in kind of one of those review sites where they have very specific categories and you get listed and the paid listings go way to the top and the regular listings, you know, just sort of languish in non-existent land.
Yep.
But I know several other people who have had really good luck with this and they're in – maybe not exactly the space that I'm in, but they're in very close spaces. So it certainly seems to be worth trying given my recent success with cold email and Facebook ads, both of which sucked.
Your recent experience, I think is the better term.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the case, but yeah, I can't wait actually for Moitza to come on the show again, because I really would like to figure out what I did wrong or how I could approach Facebook ads better. Cause I still feel like a complete idiot when it comes to that stuff, especially given that they keep changing the interface. So whatever courses and details are out there, it's like, oh, how do I map this crazy thing over here to the new interface? Like it just doesn't make sense. And they have, that's a whole subject for a different episode. But anyway, so I'm trying to make some stuff happen here and keep the growth going. You know, we had a good month last month, but, you know, things are getting locked down for Black Friday, Cyber Monday. So people are getting way more conservative about it. So now I have to take a defensive approach and get ready for the January bump when people start to look how they want to change their stores after the holidays. So trying to get in front of people, get some brand awareness, get some top of the funnel leads and things like that. So that's my primary focus at the moment. Oh, also getting ready for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, like our infrastructure, we had to up some servers this year, which was the first time we ever had to do this. And the guy that originally built this, I mean, he is, I worship at this man's feet because he made it so incredibly easy for me to scale this thing. It was literally clone a server, install the software, add it to the load balancer.
That's done. Great. Yeah.
That's it.
And that's great.
And I was started having problems and I went back and I looked at my documentation that he wrote on how to scale it. And I'm like, oh, we haven't tried this yet. I guess it's time to do it. Boom. That was it. Fixed
Let's
it.
See if there's, I'll hold my beer. Let's see if this works.
Yeah, pretty much. But that was great. And so now that, you know, Black Friday is coming, I know we're, I mean, we have way more customers this year than we do, that we did last year. Yeah. So I need to defensively prepare for that this time. So we've added more infrastructure and more capacity. I really don't know how much it's going to be used. And if we need more, I can do it. You know, we've done it enough times now that it's pretty regular. So we just wanted to get it in place and running smoothly before the crush. You know, I wasn't going to do it the day of. That's dumb.
Yeah.
So we've got it in place. We tested it all. It's all looking pretty good. So we're just kind of sitting back waiting for the deluge of traffic at this point.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. What is how is your AWS bill? Like ballpark, hundreds, thousands?
Hundreds.
Tens?
Yeah.
Hundreds?
No, ours is actually pretty cheap because we're running on some small servers. The thing that kind of sucks, the AWS bill is not the big one. It's our database bill. That's the big one.
Oh, you don't run like RDS or something like that in Amazon?
No. We're on Mongo, and Mongo's not on AWS. And, you know, I've grown to like Mongo. I won't say that I love it, but it's reasonable. But we're on an enterprise-grade infrastructure for it. It's a little pricey. It's definitely our highest ticket item every month for infrastructure. And it's like double what I pay AWS.
Wow, okay.
More than double what I pay for AWS. And I'm not getting a ton out of it either, but it's kind of a huge pain in the ass to move. So it's one of those things that I'm not really anxious to change at the moment. And that was changed just before I took it over, and there were reasons for it. You know, he went through a whole bunch of elaborate reasons why it was changed and how it got better and all of that stuff. And I'm certainly not a Mongo expert, so my reluctance to change it has to do with the fact I've got five priorities and switching database vendors ain't one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, as long as it's doing its thing, I'm kind of leaving it alone. Although I'm not really excited to go to the next tier because the tier's double. And
it's already expensive and it's about to double. Yeah.
It's going to basically take me into thousands if I double it. And you know, just my revenue takes a big hit out of that. And I don't really want to do that because I'm not really getting much for it. Just more data storage. So we implemented policies like data purging policies. If you on a certain plans, you only get data for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. But most of our data is like indexes. And so we're constantly rebuilding the indexes and futzing around with that stuff just to keep the bill low. And
Interesting.
Not the best use of my time, I'll tell you that.
No, I hear you. I mean, it's difficult. We ran into the team from Packet at SaaStock. Packet is kind of like bare metal server provider. Uh-huh. And I think Josh from Bare Metrics moved a lot of their stuff over there, like their kind of core processing stuff that they crunch all their analytics with a while back, and, you know, seen really good success and a lot of cost saving stuff like that. So we're at some point going to be looking at moving all or part of our stuff off of AWS to get into something more bare metal like this. But yeah, but I mean, it's a giant pain in the ass. And this is for Castos, just because we move big giant files and our AWS bill is just ridiculous. But I mean, it's
right. Is that mostly S3 or is that bandwidth or?
Yeah, it's S3, you know, data egress out of S3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then we put a CDN on top of that. So that makes it a little cheaper, but between the two of them, they got us. But I mean, we're looking at some ways. I think we're at the point now where it's worth the time. And I think it's kind of like part of what we're talking about today a little bit is like, it's part, like it's not worth addressing this kind of stuff when you have 10 or 20 or 100 customers, but when you have a bunch of customers and the time and money and developer time to put into something like refactoring all of this stuff, kind of makes sense, you know, as opposed to just spending, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars extra a month. If you can spend $5,000 one time, then, you know, it kind of makes some sense. So,
yeah, sort of a side note, you know, there's like, if you're starting today, as opposed to starting 3 years ago, like you get so many more better infrastructure changes or setups that are cheaper. Like this week, are you familiar with MemSQL?
No, I'm not.
So MemSQL is a database. It's an in-memory database. They basically support clustering, but they're more of a relational kind of database. So they support standard SQL syntax, unlike something like Mongo or NoSQL or whatever. And they also have JSON support. So it's kind of like a bridge between the old world and the new world. And I actually use them at my freelance client, which is how I found out about them. But these guys, get this, have a free enterprise grade license.
Wow.
That is completely and totally feature, like every feature that they have in their enterprise, totally enabled. Nothing's left out, up to 128 gig in data.
Wow. That's, yeah.
I mean, that's like six times what I'm getting for, you know, hundreds of dollars a month.
Yeah.
And if I had something like that, like I would be set for a long time. Like I would, you know, probably turn on some more indexes because that's the expensive thing with NoSQL to really get more performance out of certain things that we're doing right now that we're taking a little bit of a penalty on just to keep the index size down.
Yeah.
Because half of my size of the data that we're using is indexes.
Yeah.
The rest of it's just actual data. So it's really rough that way.
Yeah.
You know, but if we could, but switching to this thing would be like, I'd have to refactor the entire fucking code base to do it. So, it, right. I mean, there's just no way. There's just no way that's going
to
happen.
Right. Right. Yeah. And for us, I mean, it's the same thing. Plus, you know, updating plugins to say like, you know, the plugin should update with this Java, you know, JavaScript library and upload it here. And that thing is maybe only compatible with Amazon S3 and all this kind of horseshit that like, if we decide to do it, it would be a massive thing that would involve an enormous amount of testing. So the price savings has to be really obvious and totally like a no-brainer.
You've got to be like getting some infrastructure feature that's like critically, critically important to do that. Like
with a new provider, which is not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, which is not – I'm not there either. So I'm just sort of looking at that going, oh, wow, I really wish I could get 128 gig for free.
Right. Nice. But I will tell you – as you scale these things, and you might, Dave, you might be able to go to these guys and say like, hey, you know, I'm scaling, you know, to this point, or I'm in an enterprise situation or past your normal data, or like pricing table for data or storage or whatever, what kind of deal can we work out? All the people I've talked to have been very amenable to like, yeah, this is our standard deal, but for you guys, since you're just using a ton of data, you know, we can do this. So it's not, the price is not always the price.
It's true. Although, I've had zero conversations with them, so I don't know how amenable they would be. They might be.
It's worth an email. I mean, for you and everybody, it's, you know, I think it's worth an email. Just to, hey, you know, I know this is what it says. I'm doing this much. What's the deal? So maybe worth a shot. So from my end, talking about Facebook ads, so I do have the few pieces of the Facebook kind of campaigns in place. I'm running two different Facebook sets of Facebook ads, two ad sets, I guess, whatever the top level thing is. Two different approaches to Facebook ads. And this is for Castos. They've been running a couple of days so far, and one of them is looking really good already. So that's cool. The other one, we're still waiting to get some more data on. Moitza has been into my Facebook ads account and told me some stuff that I was being a total knucklehead about. So kind of tweaked a couple things. We're going to let these run for another, I don't know, until there's like, quote, significance of some sort. And she says she'll know when that is, that, you know, this is working or this is not working. For that episode, we should be another couple weeks away. I'm really excited to be able to share, you know, what we're seeing and learning with everybody and have her kind of tear apart what we're doing. Cause I think some stuff is working, and if it's not, then it's really nice to share. That's the more important thing. It's like, this isn't working because of this. It's super complicated and a great way to spend a ton of money and get no value. But if you can figure it out, I think the thing is, Dave, and I think we've talked around this. I think Facebook ads is a thing you can scale from like, not zero, but a little more than zero, like traction, to a pretty decent amount of traction, but it won't scale forever, you know? Like it won't scale to the level that something like content marketing in the long run will. So like we're looking at it as like a nice hit to get our name out and up our new trial count or whatever, but we don't, I don't think this is going to be a thing that's like going to set us on a different trajectory for the rest of the business. You know, this will be something I hope we can continue to do, but it's not like we can just put a dollar in this side and get $2 out that side forever at like kind of infinity scale. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
So, right. Yeah. I mean, I,
disclaimer,
I'm beginning to get a slightly different feeling from Facebook myself. It, you know, it either works for your market or it doesn't. And it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of in between on that.
Mm.
So if you got the right market and the right audience and you got the right content and the right ads and you have the right timing, I think all of that works. If you have something on there on that list off, I think it's hard to tell what's off, right?
Yep.
Because you don't really get a lot of feedback to say, oh, well, your content sucks, but everything else is good. You know, you don't really know. You could be hitting the wrong audience with the right content and you think it's just the wrong content and you end up changing the wrong variable in that equation, right?
Yep.
And that's the thing that I still struggle with on Facebook ads to this day. So, you know, maybe Moitza will have some insights on that on the show. I'm looking forward to talking with her.
Yeah.
About it.
Yep. Cool. Well, you know, this week we're going to kind of be talking about feature creep. I don't know if that's the bloat, you know, bloat, feature bloat in SaaS. It's kind of inspired by a tweet from Brian Castle a couple days ago talking about how, you know, some of the best known kind of biggest SaaS companies out there are, you know, kind of guilty of having feature creep and UI and UX that are just not delivering on what they kind of promise. And I think this is an interesting topic, a tough one, maybe even to talk about, but definitely a tough thing to really nail. Because I mean, Dave, you and I both are kind of running SaaS applications that started kind of in one place and as one thing and are changing and have changed to be something a little different. And like, that's the really hard thing. I think it's easy to say like, this is what the application is going to do. I'm going to design everything, the UI and the UX and the workflow and all that to make it like this. And then you go add a feature or you go add, you know, go add a button over there and it breaks all the other buttons and layouts and stuff like that. So I think that's like for us or all the people kind of listening, like once you get past the very first version of your product and you start adding stuff to it, is where like you could be getting into feature creep, but you certainly could get into like UX issues where like just adding more stuff makes the user experience a lot worse. So that's what we're talking about today. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough. So it's good of Brian to like kind of bring this up, but
yeah. And you know, it's funny on the Twitter thread, people were like, name and shame. Who are you talking about? We want to hear more.
No.
And I don't, you know, we're certainly not going to do that here either today. I think it's actually easier to talk about companies that have evolved their product in a way that hasn't completely fucked up their UX.
Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah. I mean, I would personally want to approach it that way to say, here's an example of, you know, if you're going to have to do these sorts of things, then you want to evolve in a direction that doesn't piss off your user base. And sometimes that means reworking your experience. And sometimes it means you've got a pretty good base. Like, so I feel like with Recapture, our UX is pretty straightforward. And, you know, when I took it over, there was a roadmap of features that the guy was going to work on. And some of those made sense. We finished one that he had on his list. And then the other ones, I started talking with the customers and they were sort of like, that's kind of interesting, but you know, what about these other things? And that's when I looked at other kinds of general email marketing stuff for e-commerce and found that certain things resonated more and they also fit into the whole overarching theme of let's focus on how to impact customer lifetime value. And when I started asking about those features, that's when they were like, oh, I can do that with it. Oh yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Oh yeah, definitely. I want that kind of a thing here. Oh, I would love to get these emails to get people back to my store. I would love these emails to promote this. And so that generated a lot more excitement than just saying, okay, here's the features that we're working on. But the way that the product was set up made it very easy for me to just sort of add another menu item add a widget to the dashboard. And then there was a section that basically was visually and workflowy, if that's even a word.
It is
identical.
Now.
It is now. Yeah, sure is. It was identical to the other parts of the product. And that meant faster development from my side because he had a pretty decent campaign manager and settings for this thing. And it was all generally intuitive and it followed material design guidelines. And so I didn't really have to think about all the UX. I didn't have to hire an expert to deal with all that. I just added on more of what was already working.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see that at some point we're going to hit a limit with that. Like if I had to add three more of those things in there, it would start to get a little unwieldy and I'd probably want to redo like the dashboard screen.
Yeah.
So that things were a little better organized. And if I needed to add three more, then I'd probably also want to have a different way to surface the analytics. So you're not clicking and clicking and clicking to get all of the data, mm-hmm. kind of have it all in one place and switch between tabs to say, here's this and this, or, you know, let them drag and drop to say, here are the things that are really important to me. Like show me these metrics. I don't care about the rest of this.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, there's definitely some things that could be done in there to fix it, but like, the guy had put a lot of time and a lot of effort into designing this thing in a way that was naturally extendable.
Mm-hmm.
So he obviously had some great UX and UI talent built into his own experience. I don't know what his previous development experience was prior to this, but this was clearly not his first app. And just based on the way that the code was written and commented and documented and everything like that, he'd been doing this for a while. So I think when you're in that kind of a scenario, you've got a lot to work with, but not everybody's in that scenario. You know, I certainly with the WordPress plugins that I've got, they were and still are not necessarily always in that place. They're better than they were, but man, when we took them over, they were a shit show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
For everywhere from the admin to the back end to the front end, all of it was crap. And it's even worse on WordPress because we're constantly having to keep up with whatever evolution happens. So from WordPress 3 to 4, there was a huge jump. From WordPress 4 to 5, there's coming another jump. And so every time we got to catch up with those jumps and we got to redo a bunch of stuff to keep up with it, whether we want to or not, but it's the experience that everybody sort of expects. So you're forced into conforming to that model. And when you don't conform to that model, like I still remember a couple of stinging reviews from some WordPress core members that were talking about how our admin experience was, quote, janky. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I've been on both sides of this. It's not fun either way.
But,
yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I guess my most recent experience with this, we went through a pretty major UI and really UX in terms of like how I'd consider like onboarding and getting started with Castos recently, about a month ago. And we're still dealing with it and addressing it, both with support and in engineering. And that's the whole other thing I want to talk about next is like, the long-term debt of all this kind of stuff, like adding a new feature. It's not the upfront development time. It's like all the shit that goes into it afterwards. But we went from having one podcast that you're able to kind of categorize and run within your Castos dashboard to having as many as you want. So like, Dave, we could start another podcast and run it off the same Castos account now if we wanted to have its own feed and own Spotify integration, all this kind of stuff. But that's like a pretty major thing because we didn't have the concept of like podcasts or shows before. So like we have to go and like introduce all of this to our users after some of them have been with us for like a year and a half. And so it's like a lot of UI and UX considerations, a lot of like data migration considerations, like how people interact with the app and how the next time they log in, are they going to see like all of this shit done? Or are they going to have to do something to like update the thing to show them the right information? Like it was pretty complicated. It took us a couple of months to even get it ready. And then of course, like me, I'm like, let's just push it out and let's see what happens. Maybe that's why we're still kind of like, I don't want to say dealing with it because it's been really successful so far. And like the feedback's been really positive. But yeah, I mean, this is something that like we made the conscious decision at the beginning to say, everybody's going to have one podcast per account. Now we're saying, like within the WordPress plugin, you can have as many podcasts as you want. So it only kind of makes sense that people should have multiple podcasts within a single account in like the hosting platform. So we had to kind of do that, but maybe I was a little more short-sighted than your developer with like the long-term thinking of like how the app is going to evolve over time and stuff. But man, I want to come back a little bit to the long-term implication of like time and people resources of adding features, because I think that's like the biggest underestimated thing when it comes to adding a new feature. Is like, yeah, it's going to take a month of development time, and that's whatever, a couple $1,000s, and then it's going to take half of another month for your developer to fix bugs and deal with support requests, and it's going to take a bunch of design time to get that ready and stuff. Like it's easily double whatever you think it's going to cost in just the straight engineering time.
Oh, and you haven't even added in the other one, which I get killed with, and that is then there's the time that you spend promoting, explaining, and supporting that new feature because, yeah. A, they're not aware of it. B, they don't know why they should care about it. C, once they figure out the first two, then they actually have to struggle trying to get it integrated.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, if you're on Magento, that usually involves an extension update. So I'm constantly having to badger my users, update your extensions, update your extensions, update your extensions. Because they don't. They just don't. You know, Magento has this terrible mechanism. And some of them, like, there's like three different ways you can install it. And that's so annoying, first of all. Like, there should be one canonical way to do it. But because they're self-hosted installs, there's a manual way, there's a composer way, there's the marketplace way. And so one of those will send you automatic update notices, but you still have to act on them. The other two, you get nothing. So a good portion of my users are on the manual or composer-based ones. And so they don't know that if they want to get new feature X, they got to update their extension. And so they'll like say, hey, I want to try this out. And I'll be like, great, here it is. And they're like, hey, it's not working. And I'm like, what's your extension? And they're like, oh, yeah, we're back here on ancient version X. And I'm like, shit, okay.
Right, right.
And that introduces additional problems. Like I had one person that canceled on me last month because they said that the extension failed for them. And I'm like, what? I've got 80 other customers that aren't having a problem with this. So like, let me help you out. But they just like moved on. Like they just don't have time for that. They don't have the patience for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got to work flawlessly out of the gate. You got to convince them to get it there. I mean, there's a lot of friction and obstacles and things that are in your way to get them to use new features. So for my latest one with Winbacks, I had to like pick beta people that I knew were relatively engaged and wanted to put stuff on their site and willing to go through the extra effort and give me feedback, and they're communicative, and it's not easy. And then once it's out there, like you still don't get people using it all that often. So, you know, you've got to have some engagement metrics to know, did I just build something that three people care about and nobody else pays attention to?
Yep.
Or do I have 25% of my users that are like, if you take this away from me, I'm going to come and hunt you down and knife you in the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you don't know. You don't know unless you're tracking that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's a really easy thing to say. Like, it's easy for us to say on a podcast and everybody listening, like, you should feel guilty that you're not doing this, but we're not doing it either. You know, like, I mean, to really get quantitative feedback from your users about how much they value an existing or a future feature is really difficult. I mean, I think that like you have to know as the business owner how important this is, and then tell your users how important it or valuable it is, and not necessarily just wait for them to say, yeah, that's great, or I don't really care. I think, you know, that's important, and we should listen to our users about the things they feel like they want or need. But I think to a certain extent, like they're never going to know. They're never going to know well enough for us to make an informed business decision. You know, like we kind of need to own that decision, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, they don't know what they don't know. And I'm not saying, oh, well, you should force your features on your users, because that's not, if you think you're hearing that from us, please, that's not what we're trying to say here. There's definitely things that you can do research and realize that once somebody understands what it is, that they're really excited about it, that they can see the value in it, and then they understand why this is going to impact their business.
Yep.
But there's often an educational barrier to getting to that point. Yep. I mean, there's definitely a significant number of e-commerce users that don't really understand why they should care about customer lifetime value. What does it mean to increase customer lifetime value? What impact does it have on their bottom line? And how fast will that make their business grow? Like, those are all four huge questions that if you ask the average e-commerce owner, I have found that less than 10 to 15% of them are even tracking it. Mm. And so the other three questions don't even matter. But the ones that are actually tracking it, like if you start digging deep enough, like they don't understand it. They're just like, well, I'm just tracking this because somebody told me to track it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. But what do you do with that? Like, otherwise it's a vanity metric.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to understand that this means a huge bunch of other things that could be really positive, sometimes you have to put that out there and help bring them up to speed to that, which also, by the way, ingratiates you to them and increases your trust. Then they like you more, then they are more likely to do upgrades and upsells and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's a struggle. It is absolutely a struggle. If you put in the wrong features and you're not doing education, you're just bloating your product. I mean, it's a mess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, like what it kind of comes down to is this feature either going to enable us to keep customers around? Like, are we feature incomplete relative to the competition? Which is part of the reason we just went through this kind of major upgrade, is we felt like we had to do this to be feature competitive with some of the other people in the industry. Or are you going to be able to get new customers and those customers pay you more money? I think those are the only two kind of business reasons that adding new features is worth it. Because it's cool, obviously, isn't a good enough reason. But like, you can keep your existing customers or get more customers and raise your ARPU, then it's worth it. And then you have to consider like the actual math of it. But like, if the answer to any of those or all of those is no, then it's definitely like a no for like adding new features for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to throw out a positive example that I've noticed recently. So you had tweeted this out the other day about how you really liked Help Scout. And of course I chimed in and said, yeah, I like them too. Then Help Scout, of course, liked us for saying that about them. But Help Scout is a great help desk. Both of us have been using it for a long time. But they are in the process of launching a new live chat. So they've never had live chat prior to this. They have the email support product. They have a documentation product. And now those are wrapped together in a single monthly price, I guess you could say. It used to be that they were separate. Now they're bundled together. And now they're adding in this live chat. So live chat is something that if you wanted to do support, now you can sort of have all the various pieces of your support organization under the Help Scout umbrella. Because previously, if you wanted both, and this is the case with Recapture, you added live chat separately from Help Scout. So I actually use Help Scout for docs and Intercom for live chat.
Interesting.
On Recapture, because that's what it was set up, and I'm not really, you know, it's just not one of my top priorities to deal with, and it's working fine. It's not overly expensive, and so it's all right. I'm just going to leave it alone. But for Help Scout to add in that live chat, that makes sense, because now they've got additional reason for you to sign up, and they've got a way to do an expansion revenue. I haven't seen what their pricing plans are, but I assume that they're either trying to make the plans more valuable so they can turn around and raise the prices, or they're doing this as an add-on. I haven't actually looked because I'm not looking to add that. And I certainly don't want live chat for the plugins. Yeah. Email's fine. I don't want to have, because people, I get some people that are like sending us 8 emails a day and they're expecting like live turnaround support. And this is on the free install. They're trying to get it working.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And I'm like, okay, we'll just stick with where we're at here. Email is fine. Kind of batch our responses, because you definitely get a lot of people that are like that.
Yeah.
But I think that on the right site, having the email and the docs and the chat makes a whole lot of sense to bundle that all up.
Yeah. So what they're doing, because we just switched just today, actually, Thursday. We just switched kind of live from Intercom to Help Scout for Castos. And we are using their new live chat feature, which is the best thing about their live chat feature is you can turn the ability to chat with somebody on and off in the dashboard. As you, as a user, as me as a Help Scout user or our support team or engineers can log in and say, I'm here, I'm available for chat. And then when you leave, you just say, hey, I'm not available, or it automatically turns it off, I think, if you're inactive for a certain period of time. So it's like chat is unavailable from a user perspective if there's no one there, which is like how it should be, you know? And what they're doing, I think, Dave, is they're grandfathering people in, or in this kind of like, I don't know, extended beta phase, they are grandfathering the existing plans, and they'll probably raise the price after a bit. But it's still super competitive. You know, Help Scout is really interesting. I just going through this migration, Help Scout is like top of mind. So they have a couple of features, talking about features that are so great. One is they have redirection built in on their end. So like we had a bunch of links pointing to our Help Scout docs on Intercom before. Obviously like the link structure and stuff is different. Even though we have the same like slug, everybody has like they put a term before it or a category, prefixes it or all this kind of stuff. Help Scout says, if someone is coming to support.castus.com/whatever, redirect them to whatever the link to your new Help Doc article is in Help Scout. So I was able to take the slug, like the suffix of the URL from Intercom, put it in there, and they would redirect when someone's coming to support.castus.com/whatever the Intercom URL was, redirect them to the Help Scout URL. Like that's such a small thing for them to do. They're setting a bunch of 301 redirects on their end, but like to just make switching over so easy. Like I was like, this is so fucking great. Like I don't have to worry about updating any links anywhere. You know, like I just do all of this here and it's done once. I don't ever have to worry about people like 404ing when they're going to our help docs now.
Yeah. Like anything you can do to
wonderful.
Friction and transfer like that automatically makes people more excited about using your product.
I
remember when we added import and export to the plugins, and people were begging for this for the longest time. And finally, you know, I was like, I just broke down and we spent some time and we did it. And then we had it out there, but it was kind of half baked. And I'm like, wait a minute. All right, we got to stop and redo this, because this is like the one thing that none of the other ones at the time had really done a good job at this. And that's what pissed everybody off. Their data felt trapped. Mm. They didn't have ways to do bulk edits and stuff like that. So when I added all of this, they were like, this is awesome. This is great. We love you. And it didn't matter the fact that I just made it easier to leave. They turned out to be more likely to stay because I had put that specific feature in and made it easier to migrate both directions. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, Dave, I don't know if we answered a lot of questions. Hopefully gave a few things for people to think about in terms of like adding features. I think the default should be no. And I don't mean to be like one of those badass just charge more people, but like
if But you are.
Well, no, I'm not. Like, yeah. I'm definitely not like a just charge more kind of guy, like, because I think it's really arrogant. I am like a nerd about features. So like, I'm always like, hey, can we build this? Hey, can we build that? But always the lens of like, hey, if we build this, can we, you know, add more value so that our customers would be willing to pay more? Or could we get a bunch of new customers because no one else does this? And so I hope that like with Castos and now a little bit with SalesCamp, we're being a little smarter about like, get up to feature parity to where you can actually compete. And then like, if there's a thing that you can build that would really make a difference, then it's worth it. Otherwise the answer is no. So it's like the Derek Sivers, like hell yes or no thing. Like if the answer is not hell yes, then it's no with features for me these days.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And if you've not seen that article from Derek Sivers, you should definitely read that. That's a great way to sort of filter out what features you are actually doing or should do, you know, instead of just wishy-washy adding things in there willy-nilly without really thinking about it. I think that's very much a good filter to apply right there. And if your customers aren't begging you for it, then it probably isn't something that you need, or it's not something, or even something that your customers are going to get a lot of value from, like with that educational caveat I talked about earlier, then you probably shouldn't be adding that. So anyway, hope you guys all found that valuable here this week. If you did, we'd really love it if you'd share the podcast with one other person that you think would get benefit from this. That would make a huge difference. It is the time of the year to start sharing and giving. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just Anyway, we ask that all year long. Thanksgiving isn't the single excuse for that, but
that's right.
We hope you enjoyed it. And if you get a chance, we'd love to get a review in iTunes. We'll put the link at the bottom of the show notes, and have a good week until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.